Hi, today's October 2, 2022. I'm Todd Agassoort, my good friend John Westfall, and this is Mobile Views Podcast 424. Unless we come up with something later, I think we only have one topic, but that's okay.
It's an interesting topic, though, I would argue.
And it ties into something you brought up last week about when is it time to upgrade, and when do you feel like you want to upgrade something. This for you, I think, might be an upgrade. It's some product that you use a predecessor of. I used to use one. Mine is dead now, but that's okay. And that is the recently announced Amazon Kindle Scribe, which is a what do they call it? A Paperwhite display, e-ink. That's what I was looking for. E-ink display, and but unlike other e-ink Kindles, this one can be written on using a Wacom EMR stylus, which is which just interested me to no end, just because you could write on it and, you know, my doodle a day project.
Yeah, but, and this interests me because I have had a on and off, again, love affair with Kindles. I had the original Kindle. Yep. I had... I think I might have had a Kindle 2 somewhere in there. I've also had a Kindle Oasis since it came out in, I believe, 2016 or 15.
Yeah, that's the big one, right?
Well, it's actually the small one. It's the little square Kindle.
Oh, what am I thinking of then? Anyway, go ahead and go on, please.
Yeah, and so let's talk a little bit about what the Kindle slate is, and then I'll talk about why, or Scribe, and I'll talk about why I don't think I'm upgrading from my Oasis.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I should note, I didn't have the first Kindle, because that was just way too expensive. But I think when it dropped down to about 150, I forget which model was, maybe the next generation or two away, I did pick it up. Unfortunately, I have not charged the battery consistently enough, and basically it deep discharged and died a couple of years ago, and that's too bad because it's still a good product. I have had two Kindle Fires, which are color displays. They're basically Android devices without the Google Play Store.
I would argue that they give all Kindles a bad name. The Kindle Fires are just junk.
I like them.
I've never had a good experience with one.
I think I bought a couple Amazon Primes ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I bought the then new Kindle Fire 8 HD to upgrade from my Kindle Fire 8. And, you know, as a consumption device, it is not a good Android tablet. But as a consumption device to read Kindle books, to watch Amazon Prime movies... I've never used it for Audible, but you could do it for that too. You know, for I think I paid like $70 for it. It's a pretty good deal. The speakers are excellent, far better than some of my Chromebooks, and the screen is really bright. But so, at any rate, we have dissenting views on that one.
Yeah, well, I think I have a slightly negative view of it in that my mother loved those and bought a ton of them. And trying to do tech support over the phone for a Kindle Fire tablet is next to impossible. Because you have no idea what the interface is going to look like. You have no idea what apps are on it. You don't know what anything is called settings-wise. And
unless you have one.
It is so Amazon-y in its cash-grabby ways. You know, people complain that Apple and Samsung and Google try to get you to upgrade. I mean, Amazon is the king of buy this, here's an ad, here's another ad, buy
this.
That's
their business.
Yeah, and it's frustrating as all get out. So that might be why I don't like the Kindle Fires that much.
Okay.
But yes, this is a different thing. This is an e-ink generation Kindle, which I tend to have a much better view on.
Right. So it was announced, like I said, a week or two ago. There's a couple of interesting things about it. First, you can write on it, right? Instead of some wacky stylus technology that we don't know anything about, it uses a really well-known, really sensible approach using the Wacom EMR, the electromagnetic resonance, I think. And I say that it's not wacky and I like it because one or two of my Chromebooks have a Wacom EMR stylus, which came with them. They require no batteries, no syncing, no charging. They're they're passive electronics and they work pretty good for what they are. Do they compare it to the Apple Pencil? No. But are they good? Yes. So there are two kind of pencils. The base, the cheapest, the 16 gigabyte Amazon Kindle Scribe comes with what's called the basic pen. And if you can upgrade to the higher pen, which is called premium, or if you buy the 32 or 64 gig models, it comes with the premium. So the premium adds let's see, it has a eraser, a digital eraser, and it has a programmable button. And as I mentioned, the Kindle Scribe comes in 16, 32, 64 gigabytes. It has some kind of a notebook app, which I find interesting. And this is pretty good. It has 4 years of guaranteed system updates. So I think that's pretty reasonable. Although, I think 4 years is about right. You know, the thing that gets me, though, is that I guess it's not pricey for what it does, but it is pricey. It's $340 for the basic model with the basic pen. And then it starts going up after that. If you add the premium pen to the basic price, it's like $370. And for $330, you can get a 64 gigabyte iPad, base iPad. You got to add $130 if you buy the Apple Pencil Gen 1 for the, base iPad. But still, the iPad does a lot more, I think, which is one of the things you were thinking about. So it has a Paperwhite display. And of course, it has a battery that lasts like days if you don't write on it. If it's read only, I don't know what the battery life is like if you start writing on it. So the advantages are it has the EMR pen as part of the package. You don't have to buy it separate for $340. Paperwhite display, which is readable in sunlight. And I've never used a Paperwhite display, so I don't know if that's true. John, I assume you have.
Yes.
With your Oasis.
Well, I've used something. The Oasis has it came out right around the time of the Paperwhite. They're the third generation Paperwhite.
And of course, it has all the e-ink devices have a much longer battery life than, traditional tablets. But again, I don't know what happens if you start writing on it a lot. So, I got immediately interested by it until I saw the price because of my, ongoing Doodle a Day project, which has been going on now since January 1, 2017. So it's been a while. And, I don't know. I just wanted your thoughts because I know you actually use a Kindle like recently.
Yeah. So I bought like I said, I had the original Kindle back in 2007. And then my next Kindle up from that was a number of years later. I used it off and on. So I didn't, this wasn't that I had used continuously from 2007 to 2016 the same Kindle. But I bought a Kindle Oasis in 2016, right before a vacation to the beach. And so the Oasis, I'm showing it to Todd right now.
I see it.
It's square. Yeah. It is a little square, kind of with the same size as a paperback book. It has a case that comes off of it. So you can just use it as this really little square, and then the case holds extra battery. Now, the weird thing I have experienced with this over the years, and like I said, I bought it in 2016. It's been very reliable for me, except that the charging port's getting a little loose. So occasionally I have to really make sure it's getting its charge. But the only time I use it at all, really, is when I'm at the beach to read a book. And I go to the beach once a year, maybe twice a year. And if I'm reading a book at that time, I'll bring it. But if I don't have a book I'm currently reading, I might just listen to music on the beach. So I don't use my Kindle as much as I otherwise would. So I looked at the Scribe, and I was very tempted by it.
Yeah.
Because I love the idea of an e-ink display that I can write on. I like the battery life of e-ink. I like the simplicity of e-ink. I definitely like it for using out in the sun. And occasionally I do find myself outdoors trying to take notes on my iPad, and it's not a great experience. And my Oasis is getting old. Even though it still works pretty well, it doesn't hold as long of a charge as it used to. Like I said, the charging cover is a little strange on it, so occasionally I have to fiddle with it to make sure it's charging and that doesn't lose its connection while it's charging. So I initially was interested, and then I thought about how I had just spent a lot of time and energy trying to get all of my notes in one or two apps, in this case OneNote and Apple Notes, and how my iPad Pro and the Apple Pencil I've sort of settled on as my note-taking approach, and I also have a keyboard there, so that, and I have had this happen where I've been taking notes with the Apple Pencil in a meeting, and then realized, you know what, I'm going to have to write a lot more than I can scribble out, and I can just swap over to keyboard mode and start tapping away at 100 words a minute typing. So, do I really want to complicate my life with another fractured note-taking experience? And really, I could see myself only using it at the beach or in direct sunlight. If I'm indoors, I'll probably continue to use my iPad, even though the battery life isn't great. But I have chargers everywhere I go, and I charge it every night. So
me too.
That's not a big deal. I do like that this is a competitor to Remarkable. Remarkable has had an e-ink tablet out for a few years now, where you look at the base price of a Remarkable and you think, that's not too bad, that's competitive, but by the time you add in a pen and you add in a portfolio and all that, you're about the same level that the Kindle Scribe is.
So the Remarkable, does the Remarkable not come with a stylus?
I believe you can use different styluses for it. But it doesn't, you have to select a marker for the Remarkable before, because I do not believe it actually comes with one on its own. Let me double check that. But, you know, when you go into their chooser and you choose Remarkable 2 for $299,
right,
you hit next, it goes upgrade to Marker Plus or get Marker for $79. And then there's a no thanks, I don't need a marker. But then, when you click on that, it says Remarkable 2 ships without a marker in the box. If you only plan on reading with your Remarkable, which sounds kind of like that wouldn't be why you'd buy a product called Remarkable, you won't need a marker. But if you want to write or sketch on display, you're going to need one. So
unless you had a previous Remarkable that maybe had a stylus and already have a stylus. So
maybe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're going to want this, you're going to be paying $79. And you'll probably actually go to $129 for the one that has the eraser built in.
Yeah, that's Apple Pencil 2 price.
Yeah. So really, Remarkable is, by the time you add things on, and then the folio case, because, you know, you want something to keep it nice, cover it.
Sure.
That's going to be expensive too. So it's not any better. And as you pointed out, Remarkable has this wonderful little hidden caveat that most people don't know about.
Yeah, I certainly did. It has a $3 a month fee for its connecting for note-taking and stuff, apparently.
Yeah, which seems so quaint. It seems like something that we thought we ditched years ago with this, you need to have, you know, Cloud Sync, I understand, costs money. But most groups now have built that into the price of their product. And,
right.
You know, so that was actually very shocking to me that what they call Remarkable Connect is $3 a month, and mobile and desktop note taking is still coming soon with that. So you can't even get parity in terms of something that Microsoft OneNote offers for, you know, free.
Right.
So I don't know.
I should note the Scribe itself will not be available, I think, until November. And then some of the features that it touts will not be available until sometime in 2023. So it's not going to be a full Scribe experience when you get it out of the box, if you buy it right away. I think some of the syncing options are not fully baked, and a couple of other things. So, you know, even if you find it, you know, enticing, I would wait until 2023 when all the features are available to give it a test drive.
Yeah. So otherwise, I like the idea of this product. I like that it exists. Because I think there's definitely a group of people out there that would want to use it and would want something from Amazon, especially with the Kindle Unlimited 4-month free trial. You might find that you really do enjoy having Kindle Unlimited, and you just become a voracious, vociferous reader in that time. But for me, already really invested in my workflow with OneNote and with an iPad, it's going to be a hard sell.
Yeah. And, you know, being the erudite and well-versed and well-read person that I am, the thing I read most on a tablet are comic books. So, which, you know, really need color. So, you know, a grayscale paper white, probably not the best comic book reading experience, although I guess you can. Although apparently you can't take notes on a comic book, which I find sort of, I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I'd like to see your notes on a comic book.
Yeah, I do not deface my paper comic books. I would not deface a physical comic book, but I have not read a physical comic book in years. I mean, I subscribe to both DC Universe, which used to have a video component that got rolled into HBO Max, and also Comixology. I might give one of them up soon, but I'm not quite sure which one. But yeah, so, you know, if you do want to do color stuff, like reading comic books, it's or graphic novels, if you want to be fancy about you know, what you call stuff, I would stick with an iPad or maybe even Android tablet. Although I haven't seen an Android tablet I want to buy yet. And I kind of do want to buy one, but oh well.
Yeah. Well, and I just really hope that Amazon keeps the Kindle e-inks in their useful form. I would love to see some way that those annotations and everything could be reviewed on the desktop. I'll be curious to see how they build the note-taking app out and see if it will be accessible on the desktop platform or mobile platforms as well. That would make it a fairly compelling thing. If I could scrawl my notes on the e-ink and then view them on my iPad or on my iPhone or computer, that would be a nice grab on it.
Yeah, my recollection, again, it's been years since I used a Paperwhite Kindle. My recollection is when I took notes on it, just for testing, it was accessible via an Amazon website. Gosh, I can't remember where it is, but let me, the great research, right? Amazon Kindle Notes on Web. Let me see. I think it's Kindle Bookmarks, Notes and Highlights. So, yeah, so there's a website, see your highlights and notes anywhere on any device for the older Kindles. I assume this is true for this one.
And they're talking about a new app. All notebooks are automatically saved and backed up to the cloud for free. And coming in early 2023, they'll also be accessible via the Kindle app. So I assume anywhere the Kindle app is, you'd be able to grab your notebooks. So that's nice if you do a lot of reading and a lot of
note-taking. Like you're a student.
While you're reading.
Yeah.
Textbooks are on Kindle, which I doubt they are. That's sort of the problem.
That's a good point. My daughter's still in school. I went back to school. And her ebooks are in some weird format, I forget, but I guess they're not weird. Some academic proprietary format. But yeah, they're not
in the
United
States, yes.
Yeah.
The weirder thing about textbooks that I've noticed is that in the United States, the distribution channels typically go through DRM'd, like, crazy formats because they don't want piracy. But yet in other markets, at least up until a couple years ago, they've stopped doing this now because they've realized that the internet is a global thing. But in other markets, they would distribute them as PDF.
Really?
And so you could find exact copies of a textbook that was originally meant to be distributed in a different market as a PDF. But if you were trying to get it in the United States, you had to go through an app that, and I hate to say it, most of these apps are pretty bad. Because they are not designed by programmers at Apple or Microsoft or Google that, are into UX and all of that. They're designed by people who they're told the most important thing is you don't let people print too much from it or copy and paste too much from it. So the R&D budget on the app goes all toward DRM to make it as locked down as possible. And the user experience is horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, but the academic book publishers have always been kind of like that, haven't they? I mean, their books are incredibly overpriced. Well, at least for regular human beings. I understand, it's a limited publication run for most of these. But boy, I remember even and I'm an old person. Even in my day, I remember buying a $100 book and going, "Wow, that wasn't $100. Yeah. It's a lot of money."
Well, and this is actually why in my department right now, and of course we're a small department. We only have 2 full-time faculty, and we're hiring a third. We've decided to make the shift over the next couple of years to 100% open educational resources.
Oh, wow.
For our courses, because we just are sick and tired of dealing with publishers.
Wow.
And the resources out there in psychology that are open educational resources are very good.
No kidding.
They're getting to the point where it's the exact same content that I would be having my students read in a textbook, and the textbook really does not add any anything that I can't add through original source materials or through an open educational product.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you should start a podcast or something just on that topic. That sounds fascinating.
I suspect that if we look at what happened to cable television over the last, 30 years, and we look at what happened to a lot of the entertainment industry and a lot of the book publishing industry, the textbook publishing industry is next to basically crater.
It really needs to be revolutionized.
They have put themselves in a situation where they'd make no money off of old editions. They want everything to go to a new edition because the used market is bad. They've started to now at least go to a cloud licensing model. So things, it's more and more common that my students pay $40 a semester for a e-rental, which typically is better than $120 for a physical book that they're then going to sell back for $6 or something like that. So that's a better model. But then, like I said, those platforms are designed to be locked down as much as possible, and they're horrible experiences. And I will tell you, this semester with my general psychology class, the publisher sunset a version of their app on September 1st.
Wow.
I didn't realize that, so I had set up to use that, and then all of a sudden my students were in for a little bit, and then they were out. And then even the new version, I don't really get much value out of it. Now, if you are an instructor that really likes the idea of assigning a lot of interactive activities and those things, if you're doing completely online instruction, you might get a lot of benefit out of the publisher's platforms that do things such as, interstitial quizzing and things like that, so that as students are reading, they're also doing comprehension checks. The problem with that, though, is that I have seen more than a few not-so-qualified instructors use that as a crutch. And so then students are basically told, okay, here's your e-textbook, and here are 50 activities on every chapter, and I'm assigning all 50 of them. And the students don't know why they're doing what they're doing, and the instructor just goes, well, the computer graded it that way, so I don't really know why to, don't know what to tell you. It's sort of a weird world in academic publishing that we're seeking to avoid by just moving our students to open educational resources, OER.
I'm going to write that down. Open educational resources. I have never heard of that.
And I'll put a couple of links in our show notes to some of the titles we're using, because there are a number of things out there now that allow open educational resources on really anything you want. I mean, NOBA Project is one that I've used. OpenStax is another. NOBA will let you build a custom textbook, basically.
Wow.
So you can say, I want this chapter, and I want this reading, and I want this or that, and it will package it all together as a PDF, or you can just link students straight to what you want them to review.
Yeah. You know, for those of us who are old, I remember when we would get a reading list from our profs. Basically, a lot of them were journal articles and things, because, it was illegal to copy them, I guess. But but basically, here are the 20 articles you need to read, for the next couple of weeks. Go find them. Good luck with that. And we'll return back and discuss them over the next couple of months or whatever. But this sounds like a lot better way to do all that collection, because otherwise there was hey, I can't find this journal article. You're talking to the sci-tech librarian or something. Oh, yeah. Somebody's probably got, you can't check them out, but, probably somebody scrolled it away somewhere and hidden it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm pretty sure at that time, because when I was in grad school, we still had that. We still had, go to the library, get a copy of this journal article, and you'd go find it. You'd have to find a photocopier and make a copy. I suspect the reason why your profs didn't distribute it is just they didn't have the copy budget to run a copy for everyone.
Yeah.
It was better to just make the students run the copy, or make the students go to the library, read the article, and take notes on it, and then give the article back, and then you just have your notes on the article. So
I'll tell you a funny story speaking of photocopying in a library, which I guess you can do that for educational purposes. You just can't do it mass copying. But at any rate, so when I was a grad student, one of my profs who was on my committee said, hey, you know, as a graduate student, you can get a locked carrel, locked with a door, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you can study in, and it's big enough for copying machine. I will fund you. I will buy the copying machine and put it in there for you if you let me have a spare key to the carrel. And so that's what we did. He bought a copying machine, put it in my carrel, and we both used it free of charge to me, I'm happy to say. And it was great. So everybody else was standing in line copying machine. I kind of quietly wore into my little carrel and started copying away. It was awesome. But at any rate.
Yeah, I had that as an undergrad in the honors program at my institution. You could get a locked study carrel as well.
Yeah.
And I would go in there at 8 in the morning, get my key, go set up shop. I had a security cable for my laptop, so I'd have the laptop secured in there, and I would come and go throughout the day and use it as a faculty office, in a sense. And then at the end of the day, just turn in the key, and the next day, and I even knew which carrels had windows and which ones were, you know, nicer than others. And one of them had a chair in it that you could go, you know, sit out the. So yeah. Had my favorite study carrels, and I would get there early enough to grab it before any other grad student or any other honor student.
Oh, boy. Anyway, the old days, things kids don't have to worry about anymore,
yes,
I think.
Very true.
I did want to note while we were talking, since we were talking about Remarkable, and this is just coincidental, you know, I just happened to go to Y Combinator's Hacker News just before this podcast to see if anything else popped into interest for me. And the thing that did pop in that I did find interesting based on our, you know, you're mentioning Remarkable, is there is a person, I don't know the name of the person, I didn't look it up, but the website is called handwritten.blog, and I'll post a link there to the specific article that this person wrote called Hyperlinks in Handwriting. So this person creates the blog using Remarkable, so it's all and I've got to say the penmanship is awesome. If I did a handwritten blog, it would look like probably like a crypto-ciphered blog or something. It would be unreadable. But this person's penmanship is just great. And I didn't realize this, but you can somehow embed, not write out the hyperlink, like, you know, HTTP colon something, something, something. But actually, it's a hyperlinked word. Like, there's a bunch of things that show up as blue instead of black. Type or handwritten text on the website, and if you hover over it, you can see what link, like the person links to remarkable.com, for example, and some other websites. You know, if you have good handwriting and you can write fast, and I have neither, this is an interesting way for people who, for whatever reason, prefer to write. And I know some people do prefer handwriting. I also know people who prefer fountain pens, which I find scary. but it's really interesting. It's well worth a look, even if you're not particularly interested in Remarkable, just to see what somebody can do. Oh, and this person also has like a, what is that? Some kind of markup language on it. Really, really, really fascinating. Oh, this is HTML, I guess, or some kind of markup HTML, how he or she actually creates these links in Remarkable. Really cool. Really, really cool.
Learn something new every day.
I know. It's wild. So that's about it, I think. I think I don't have anything else to add, except I'm still waiting for my iPhone Pro to arrive.
And as I revealed to Todd, I will have an iPhone 14 Pro in the house at the end of the month. My wife decided to upgrade, so she will have a better phone than me. She'll be on the 14 Pro. I'll be on the 13 Pro. But it was ultimately her iPhone 10's battery and also her desire to be able to take better photos won out. So with a couple of trips coming up in the next year, I think she'd like to be able to, if I'm not there right now, she'll just tap me and go, you take that photo.
Right.
Your device. So this way she won't have to have me around. If we split off and go do different things, she can take the photo she wants to. And I suspect that's mostly because one of those places we'll be going is Walt Disney World. And
oh, nice.
she loves spending time at the Seas Pavilion and such in Epcot, and right. I like sea creatures and water, but not as much as she likes to stand there for hours and look. So
I should note that I have got my case and my trade-in box to ship my iPhone 12 Pro back, but I've got no actual iPhone 14 Pro. So,
you still need the 12 Pro for a while.
Yeah, I do. And fortunately, it's in really good shape. And as I said, I am trading it in, so hopefully they'll award me the full value that, you know, they said they would. But I'm looking forward to it. I think the camera, you know, just looking at your photos with you have the 13 Pro, right?
Yep.
Just looking at your photos compared, of course, you have the Max, so maybe that's not a good comparison. No,
I have just the regular Pro.
Oh, okay. Yep. But I was really impressed by your 13 Pro photos, so I'm really looking forward to, you know, to having a. I mean, the 12 Pro camera is great. Don't get me wrong, but you know, a better power. You know, as Tim Cook and folks always say, the best camera we've ever made. You know, like they're gonna say, yeah, this is the worst camera we ever made. So, but just buy it anyway.
Yeah, they never talk about their retro technology that way. This was the worst camera we ever made.
Yeah. One thing I did want to ask you, if you've been, you know, I still have no intention of buying the new AirPods Pro 2, but I have to say that the reviews of it have been very, what's the word I'm looking for? Glowing? I'm a little bit surprised by that.
I was very tempted to this week because I realized that I think one of my Anker charging mats died. And that would mean since I wear my Apple Watch to bed with the newer AirPods Pro, I could leave it on the Apple Watch charger and charge because it can charge off of that. But that's not quite yet as compelling as a case. So for now, I will not. But you never know. If over the holiday some really good AirPods Pro 2 deal comes out,
yeah.
I would not rule it out.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, for a traveler like you, I remember you bought a special case for your AirPods Pro case to carry on your belt.
Yeah, I have the AirSnap case from 12 South. So I've used that for 3 years now. It's always on my belt.
The AirPods Pro 2 comes with a lanyard loop, so hey. You know.
Yeah, I would probably use that. It has been nice, though, having it within easy reach. That was the big thing that made my AirPods worthwhile was when I started carrying them every day. If you're not carrying them all the time, if you're just throwing them in your bag, it's that little extra step that I found really hard to remember to do.
Yeah. And I will note that I read, 95 Mac, I think, and they're saying that the first gen AirPods Pro users like you and me are seeing a adaptive transparency option for it in iOS 16.1 beta. So I don't know if that's going to really happen, but apparently this new adaptive transparency option, which I think is really interesting.
Well, I did see the contouring mode in my beta 1 or my beta iPhone. So it had me take pictures of my head and all of that, but I don't know if that's the adaptive transparency.
I think that's it, or it's part of it. You know, it's supposed to give you a better experience, audio. I was going to say audio experience through your headset. And you know, again, I still can't take my AirPods Pro outside my door for fear of it falling out and never seeing it again. But and I think when Sterling was on, we talked about the Skull Candy wireless earbuds that he bought for like $40 at Costco. So I ran out and bought one too. Because it was so affordable. And it is pretty good. It sounds good and doesn't fall out of my ears. I'm pretty, you know, I wish Apple would go hire their designer or something. But that said, a good point. Yeah, if we see a good deal in AirPods Pro holiday season, might be something to look at. And yep. I did want to say, John, you know, we only do an audio recording, but I did notice your shirt said Route 61, so I had to go look it up. Because I only know 66, which goes east to west, and apparently yours goes north to south.
Yes, mine is the Blues Highway. Starts in the area people know goes from Memphis down to New Orleans.
Yeah,
and so it's all the major parts of the Delta Blues, and you can hear it on not by name, but on Paul Simon's Graceland when he talks about. I am heading down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. That's 61 if he's going from New Orleans up to Memphis. So,
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it says, according to this one, Highway 61 goes all the way north to a city named Wyoming, not the state, city named Wyoming in Minnesota. So it goes pretty far north.
Well, and it is literally about 2 miles, only about a mile west of or east of where I'm sitting is Highway 61. Nice. So, yeah.
Nice. I am not a highways expert, but I do seem to remember that highways that are odd numbered are north to south, and even numbered are east to west, like 66 and 61.
Yep, unlike the interstates, which it's the inverse.
Yeah.
Interstates go the other way, where odd number are north, south. You're right.
Highway 5, yeah.
The numbering goes the opposite direction. So higher number interstates, there's something there that's different between U.S. routes and interstate routes, but yes.
That's right. We weren't called highways. They weren't highways. They were routes. I forgot about that. I forgot that. They're much narrower and historical for those reasons. But any rate, I did not know about that. I saw your T-shirt as we were talking. I said, "What is Route 61?" So I had to go look.
And now you know.
And now I know. So I learned something from you, John. And this is by just reading your T-shirt. Who knew? Okay, we will talk next time.